Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is June the 16th, and we are in Yirmiyahu in Perek Tes, Chapter 9. We are continuing with the Haftorah of Tisha B'Av. We already started it last week, which was the latter half of Perek Ches of Chapter 8. And the Haftorah of Tisha B'Av continues almost through the entire chapter, not quite the entire chapter, but almost to the end. Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, Mit neni vamidbar milon orchim. Hashem says, who would give that I be in the wilderness, the place of the orchim usually means guests, but it means where people don't really live. Ve'ezvah esami, I'll leave my nation behind. Ve'alcham eitam, and I will go away from them. Kichulam inoafim, because they are all adulterers. Atzeres bogedim, they are a gathering of people who rebel. Of course, as we know, many times when it says adultery, that can mean actual adultery, or it can mean going to avodah zarah, going to idolatry. The Medrash says over here that the term milon orchim, milon means like that where people like a hotel, it's like a temporary place, but it can also be related to the word tluna, which means to complain, like the tlunos of the Bnei Yisrael that they complained in the wilderness. Hashem says, who would give that I be back in the wilderness where they were complaining? Even that is better than where we are now with all the people doing averos. I'd rather be back in the wilderness with the Jews who, as we go through the Chumash, they seem to complain so many times. Hashem says, I prefer that over what is going on now. Pasuk Beis, verse 2, Vayadrichu es leshonam kashtam sheker. They train their tongues and their arrows to be false. Their tongues are false. Their arrows, meaning their tongues, are false. V'lo lamuna gavu varetz. And they are not strong in the land. They are not doing it in a trustworthy way. Ki me ra'a el ra'a yatsa'u. For from evil to evil they have gone out. V'osi lo yado. And me they have not known. Num Hashem, says Hashem. It's an interesting phrase. Vayadrechu es lishonam. Means to prepare or to train, to set up their tongues or their arrows to be false. We know that when Yaakov Avinu in Parshas Vayetze, he's running away from Esav and he's going to Lavan, so he davens to Hashem to protect him from Lavan. So he says that, if Hashem protects me, Ushmarani, Hashem protects me, and He gives me lechem lech aluveget lilbosh, He gives me food, bread to eat and clothing to wear. And then He says, then I will make this place that I'm davening at, I'll make it into a base Elokim, I'll make it into a house of God. And everything He gives me, aser asvenulach, I will tithe it, I'll give miser to Hashem. So, that's a classic davening that Yaakov has to Hashem, that I'm going in a dangerous way right now, and I need help, and I'm davening that you help me out. So there, it lists the things that he's concerned about. He's concerned he won't have any bread to eat, he's concerned he won't have any clothing to wear, he's concerned about the dangers that will befall him with Lavan, but he says, Ushmarani baderech hazeh asher anochi holeich. He'll protect me on this road that I am going. The Medrash says that hinted to in that expression with the word baderech, on this road, is vayad rechu that we have here in the first word in Pasuk Beis in verse 2, that it is a reference to Lashon Hara. Yaakov Avinu is asking Hashem, protect me from Lashon Hara. Do you ever think about davening to be protected from Lashon Hara? Is that interesting? We always don't want to speak Lashon Hara, but we also, he's asking, Hashem, I know Lashon Hara is dangerous. That can really harm me. I'm asking you to protect me from the Lashon Hara of others. We say at the end of Shemoneh Esrei, Elokai Nitzor Lashoni Meira, we say, Hashem, hold back my tongue from evil, Usfasai Midaber Mirma, my lips from speaking falsehood. So we say that. But we also say over there, Vilim Kalalai Nafshi Sidom, those who curse me, my soul should be silent. And then we say, V'nafshi ke'ofar la'kol tiyeh. And my nefesh, my soul, should be as dust to everyone. So there are different explanations for what that means. But one understanding is that I shouldn't be someone that people are upset about. People who want to talk. I don't want to talk about other people, but I also don't want other people to talk about me. So my soul should be as dust. No one should notice me and be upset with me. Yaakov Avinu davens to be protected from the Lashon Hara of other people. And that is hinted to because of this word, vayadrichu, which there he says, derech, in this way, this path. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Ish merayayu hishameru. Each man from his friend. Be careful. Be careful from your friend. Ve'al kolach al tivtachu. Do not rely on any brother. Ki cholach akov Yaakov. For every brother is akov Yaakov. Well, we'll translate that in a minute. V'chol Rea and all friends, Rachel Yahaloch, are going and they're spreading tales. They're being tale bearers. The people who appear to be friendly are actually stabbing each other in the back, and they're telling Lashon Hara about each other, and they are double-crossing each other. For every brother, Akov Yaakov. Now, the word Yaakov is clearly the exact letters of Yaakov, of our forefather Yaakov. Yaakov, we know, is named Yaakov because V'yodo Ochezes Ba'akev Esav, because his hand was holding on to the ankle of Esav, so he was named Yaakov. But the truth is, the verb akov is a verb that means to be crooked and to do something deceitful and to double cross. Yaakov, who is the ish emes, the man of truth, titain emes li Yaakov, but his name comes from a verb that actually means to be deceitful and to double cross, to be crooked. So even though, of course, he's not named for that, he's named because of the ankle of his brother that he was holding on to, but there is still a connotation of negativity in that verb. Yaakov Avinu, of course, his avoda, his job in the world, what he worked very hard at, was to be a truthful person. And instead, he is known as the Ish Emes, as the man of truth. But it was that his name suggested that he could have been otherwise. And here, we, of course, are B'nai Yisrael. We use Yaakov's other name, the name of Yisrael, which is the name that he was given by the angel, later by Hashem directly. He was given that name, which implies that he is of princely, stature, Yisrael. But it also is a name that suggests that he deserves everything he has. It wasn't that even though the brachos that he got appeared to have been gotten in a crooked manner, a Yaakov style, but the truth is he is Yisrael. That in fact he deserved those brachos. Esav did not deserve them, and it was appropriate for him to get those brachos. We carry the name Yisrael, we also carry the name Yaakov. We are all descendants of Yaakov / Yisrael. And of course, we always mean it in the positive way. However, here, unfortunately, the Jews were demonstrating the negative side of the verb Yaakov. And every brother is Akov Yaakov, is crooked, is deceitful against their brother. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4. V'ish b're'ehu yehaselu. Each man against his friend, again he is deceitful. V'emes lo yedaberu, and they do not speak the truth. Limdu lishonam daber sheker. They teach their tongues to speak falsehood. Ha'ave nil'u. They go to, again, to crookedness. It's another word for crookedness. They teach their tongues to speak falsehood. The Gemara tells us that a person should be careful not to tell a child that they will give them something and then not give it to them, because it's training the child to lie. So, Leman Lianuka, don't tell a child, I'm going to give you something, and then don't give it to them. The Gemara tells us a story of an adult son, the son of Rav. Rav, for whatever reason, his wife sometimes would, if she was unhappy with him for whatever reason, she would sometimes deliberately make him food that he didn't want, meaning that he would ask for, there were two types of food, the Gemara says, he would ask for one and she'd make the other one. And then, one time he was expecting this to happen and instead she made him the correct food. So he didn't know why, so his son told him, because I told mommy to make the other one. And as I told her to make the one that you didn't want, so she made the one you did want. So Rav said to him, that was a clever trick, but you shouldn't do it. Because this pasuk, because you gotta be careful with training yourself to lie. So whatever the story is between Rav and his wife, Rav is one of the greatest of the Amoraim of the Gemara, and clearly his wife must have been a great woman if she has a husband like that. So whatever was going on between them, that's clearly not for this class, but the lesson we're taking out of there is what happened with the son, that Rav said to him, even though you found a way to make things work, then don't do it. It's not a good idea because you're training yourself to lie. The particular point with the child that the Gemara says, don't tell him you're going to give him something and then don't do it. So this happens, at least what I've noticed, is this happens in two ways. One way it happens is that a person forgets. You know, they say, oh, I'll give you, if you do this, I'll give you this, whatever you tell him. And then to the adult, it's not such a big deal. So the adult forgets, but to the child, it's very meaningful. And if they don't get that lollipop, then they feel that they've not been given what they were told they're going to be given. So that is, they're being trained to lie. The other way this happens, I believe, is that sometimes a parent will tell a child that they'll get something. Like for instance, if you clean your room, you'll get a lollipop. So the child cleans their room. Then the child does something bad. Child, hits their brother. So then the parents, forget the lollipop. So that's a very bad practice. Because the child did something that deserved the lollipop. They clean their room. So it could be they deserve a punishment for hitting their sibling. But the taking away that which they earned, that's not a healthy practice. The child earned it. And it's theirs. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not do that to us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't say, you earned reward for a mitzvah. But a person did an avera, so we'll cancel it out. And no reward for the mitzvah. Hashem doesn't do that. If we earned the reward, we get the reward no matter what. And then if there has to be a punishment, then there has to be a punishment. That's a separate discussion. It's not that they don't offset each other. So that's not a healthy practice to do. To take away that which goes to the child. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky famously, when talking about training children and chinuch and raising children, he famously would tell parents that don't get hung up on those behaviors that you know the child is going to eventually grow out of. Be more concerned about those behaviors that the children, if they learn them, they will continue them into adulthood, because we see adults doing it. So that would be things like Lashon Hara, like over here, acting in a deceitful manner, that adults do as well. The well-known story with Rav Yaakov is he was once at somebody's home, and a student of his and his wife, and the student's young child was sitting on his lap, and his wife had put out some cake, whatever it was, because of Rav Yaakov was there, and the child climbed up on the table to grab the cake. So the father got very, very upset. He started reprimanding the child. So Yaakov told him, what are you worried about? He's not going to be climbing on the table when he's 20 years old. It's just not going to happen. So he climbed on the table. That's not something for a parent to get concerned about, because he's going to grow out of it. So just because you don't like it, but it's not a big deal. But the speaking Lashon Hara, speaking in lies, deceit, that is something which a parent does need to be concerned about, because that is a learned trait that we continue, unfortunately, into adulthood. And so, here the Gemara is emphasizing a very, very important, concern with child rearing, which is to be mindful of this issue of not training a child to lie, to be perfectly honest with a child, particularly if one says they're going to give something to the child, to make sure to give it to them and not to forget to do so and not to take it away. Pasuk Hey, verse 5. Shivtcha v'soch mirma, you dwell in deceit. B'mirma me'anuda, so see, with deceit you have held back from knowing me, Nuh Hashem, says Hashem. Lachein komar Hashem tzvokos, therefore, says Hashem. Hinani tzorfam uvechantim, behold, I am going to purify them. That's not a good thing, because it means going through the crucible. Uvechantim, and I am going to test them. Test them here means that, to weed out all the impurities. Ki eche esem b'pnei v'asami, for how can I do good the way that my nation is behaving? Chetz shachut lishonam, their tongue is like an arrow that slaughters. A slaughtering arrow is their tongue. Mirma diber, they speak falsehood. Befiv shalom esrayehu yedaber, with their mouths they speak shalom to their friends. Uvekirbo, but in their inside, in their midst, yasim arbo, they're actually planning how to ambush him. It's double talk, and it is deceitful. The Gemara makes draws a lot from this phrase chetz shachut lishonam. Their tongue is like an arrow that slaughters. There's a technical point that is derived from here, that slaughtering, which of course is done through shchita, through a knife, through a cutting the animal. That's how we make an animal kosher in killing it. That it has to be done with a clean cut. Just as an arrow is a clean cut, so too, as if the arrow runs along something, it cuts it cleanly, so too, the shechita has to be a clean cut. That is actually a technical aspect of shechita, that if it's a jagged cut, the animal is no good. One cannot eat that animal. So this is derived from here, that the shechita should be like a chetz, like an arrow, that it be a clean cut. But from a Musar standpoint, about Lashon Hara, the Gemara tells us, you see from here, truth is you see from a previous verse as well, that Lashon Hara is like an arrow. And there are two ways the Gemara compares Lashon Hara to an arrow, to shooting an arrow. First of all, an arrow gives one the ability to kill or to hurt someone who is a great distance away. If I'm trying to strike a person with my fist, I can only get as far as my fist can reach. But if I have an arrow, we would say a gun, but it's the same idea. If you have something, you have a projectile, then a person can hurt someone who is much further away from where they are. So too, Lashon Hara has the ability to damage and hurt that which is far away from me. I don't need to have the person right next to me to hurt them with Lashon Hara. I can damage them from far away. It allows my evil to go beyond my reach, which obviously is a terrible thing. In addition to that, just as after one shoots the arrow, it's too late. You can't pull it back anymore. Even if you have remorse, a person shot the arrow, a person shot the gun. And the moment after they pull the trigger, they say, oh no, I wish I didn't do that. It's too late. Once that trigger is pulled, once that arrow is sent through the air, it's too late. One cannot do anything about it. It's going to reach whatever target it was aimed for. So too the Lashon Hara, it gets away from us. We can speak Lashon Hara in the heat of the moment. We're very, very angry, upset, hurt, and we feel that we want to lash out, and we do with our Lashon Hara, and then a moment later we can feel remorse. That's too late. The words have already been said, the words are already out there, and one is very often unable to dial it back. So one has to be very, very careful. Lashon Hara is like a loaded gun in the sense that it, once it's gone, once it's set in motion, there's very little one can do to stop it. Pasuk Ches, verse 8. This pasuk we've had twice before, and I made mention of this when we had it before. Hal Eila Lo Efkad Bam Neum Hashem. For these things, I will not, visit them with punishment, says Hashem. You think I'm not going to punish for this? If a nation that behaves in this manner, my soul will not take revenge. Will I not punish for this? We had the exact same verse regarding adultery, and we also had it regarding false judgment, judging falsely. And the I mentioned back then, the Medrash says that of those three averos, judging falsely, adultery, and Lashon Hara is the worst of the three. Pasuk Tes, verse 9, Al Heharim Esa V'chivanehi. On the mountains, Hashem says, I will cry, I will lift my voice and cry, and in wailing, V'al Naos Midbar Kina, and on the plains of the wilderness, Kina, a lamentation, Ki Nitzesumi Bli Ish Over, for they have become desolate, with no man passing through, v'lo shamu kol mikne, they no longer hear the sound of cattle. This is talking about Eretz Yisrael is completely desolate, no people, no cattle. Me'of hashamayim v'ad behema, from birds of the sky to animals, nadadu halachu, they have all gone away. There is nothing left here in Eretz Yisrael, the people, the animals are gone. The Gemara tells us the gematria of the word behema. Behema is 52. Beis is 2, hey is 5, mem is 40, hey is 5. So 40 and 2 fives is 50, and then 2 is 52. So the Gemara says, for 52 years, Eretz Yisrael was completely desolate. Which 52 years? So from the time the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, the truth is a little bit after the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, after the story of Tzom Gedalia, which we will learn about it actually in great detail, Mirtz Hashem, in Yirmiyahu, it will not be for a little while before we get there. We will not get there before this coming Tzom Gedalia, but perhaps before the next one. We'll get there, we'll see. But the story of Tzom Gedalia is going to be told in Yirmiyahu. That happened shortly after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. After that, then the Jews are completely removed from Eretz Yisrael. There are no Jews left in Eretz Yisrael, no people left in Eretz Yisrael. And that is true for the next 52 years until the Jews return under the King Koresh, the Persian King Koresh, who allows for the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. They lay the foundation of the Beis HaMikdash, and then it's going to be stopped. And then 18 years later, then they're able to continue the building of the Beis HaMikdash. But for the first 52 years of the 70 years of Galus Bavel, of the Babylonian exile, there are no people, no animals, no birds in Eretz Yisrael. Can you imagine? No birds. There's not a rustle, nothing, absolutely nothing. There's no animals, no people, no birds in Eretz Yisrael for 52 years. That's how desolate it became. When Hashem sent us out of Eretz Yisrael, He made it a complete desert, a completely desolate place. Who knows what that does to the ecosystem when you have nothing, besides no people. You have no animals, no birds. What does that do to the whole system? I can't tell you. I have no idea. But that the place was completely bereft of any kind of we'll call it higher life forms. I don't know about insects, but certainly no people, no animals, no birds in Eretz Yisrael for those 52 years. Pasuk Yud, verse 10. V'nasati es Yerushalayim legalim. I will make Yerushalayim to be this another word for like these just mounds of desolation. Me'onet tanim, a living place for snakes. V'esarei Yehuda etein shmama, and the cities of Yehuda will make completely desolate. Mibli Yoshev, with no one dwelling there. Mi'oish hechacham v'yavein ezos. Who is a wise man who understands this? V'asher diber pi Hashem elav v'yagida. And that the word of Hashem was spoken to him and he could tell us. Alma of the Haaretz. Why was the land lost? Nitzasa chamidbar mibli over. Destroyed like a wilderness with no one passing through. What caused the destruction of the first base Hamigdash? What caused it? The Gemara tells us that this pasuk means shalu lechachamim. They asked the wise men, and they didn't know the answer. Shalu lanevim. They asked the prophets. They didn't know the answer. No one knew why was the Beis HaMikdash destroyed. Now, it doesn't mean that the people were perfect. They knew they were doing averos. The question is not, did the people do anything wrong? We have a whole book of Yirmiyahu that is full of things we were doing wrong. But what was the main point? What was that which was the trigger for the destruction? We all know that the second Beis HaMikdash, the exile that we are unfortunately in right now, was triggered by sinas chinam, baseless hatred. We are aware of that. We talk about it all the time, particularly around Tisha B'Av. It's often discussed. But what was that trigger of the first Beis HaMikdash? The Gemara tells us, in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, they did gilui arayis. They were immoral. They did shvichus damim. They murdered. They did avodah zarah. They did idolatry. Doesn't mean everybody did these things, but there was a sizable minority of people behaving in this manner. So that's why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. But what triggered all of that? Where did it come from? How did we fall? What is the main point? And no one knew the answer. The wise men, the sages did not know the answer. The prophets didn't know the answer. This was a conundrum. Why? What did we do? What was the trigger? What is the thing that ultimately caused the destruction? And no one knew until Hashem himself gave the answer to Yirmiyahu right here in Perek Tes, chapter 9, Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12, the next Pasuk. Vayomer Hashem, why? Al ozvam es torasi asher asati lifneim. They forsook my Torah that I gave to them. V'lo shamu v'koli, they did not listen to my voice. V'lo hol chuva, and they did not follow it. So is that a satisfying answer? I would think not. We didn't keep the Torah. Well, we know that. We know we didn't keep the Torah. I mean, obviously we didn't keep the Torah. What is Hashem answering? Hashem is giving an answer. They didn't know. What is the trigger? What's the reason for the why everything kind of fell apart? And the answer is, well, they didn't keep the Torah. We want to know why didn't they keep the Torah? So the Gemara says, no, Hashem is giving an answer. Because it says in this pasuk, they didn't listen to my voice and they didn't go in the ways of the Torah. V'lo holchuva. That second phrase is adding something. What exactly is it adding? Now you see, we do need the wise men and the Nevi'im to explain to us what this pasuk means. But Hashem is giving an answer. So what answer is he giving? So the Gemara in Maseches Nedarim says something which is shocking even to the commentaries on the Gemara. It's a shocking answer. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech haolam shehakol nivra. The Gemara says, Shelo berchu batorah tchila. They did not make a bracha before they studied Torah. Let me repeat that. They did not make a bracha before they studied Torah. We know every morning we make in our brachos in the Siddur, we have the Birchos HaTorah. Shabbat Arbanu Mikol HaAmim. Harev, no, we have Asher Kiddushanu. Lasok B'divrei Sora. We have the brachos of the Torah. So we know it's important to make a bracha on Torah. Okay? We understand it's an important thing. Says the Gemara, you know why it all fell apart? Because they didn't make a bracha on the study of Torah. So many of the commentaries, we will quote the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, who says, they ask the question, okay, I understand it's important to make a bracha on Torah, but that's why it all fell apart? What? That's the main thing that happened? Why would that cause everything to fall apart? So the Ran explains that not making a bracha on Torah, it wasn't that they forgot to make a bracha. It's that they did not think that the study of Torah was worthy of a special bracha. It was an indication of the value that they put on the study of Torah. Torah is so precious to us, and the study of Torah is so precious to us. By not making a bracha, what they were saying is, yeah, Torah has its place, it's got its importance, there's value to it, but it's not so important. By devaluing the Torah, or I should say the study of Torah, by devaluing the study of Torah, that led to all the terrible sins that went on in the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. And you understand that it's kind of one thing leads to another, meaning that it's not that the great sages didn't value the Torah. Of course they did. And of course the prophets did. But there was a sizable portion of people who did not value the Torah enough to think that it warranted a bracha before study. So that just created an entire atmosphere of devaluing the study of Torah, and therefore those who were the most susceptible to the Yetzer Hara would then fall even further and ended up with murder, idolatry, immorality. Because if the society does not value the study of Torah, then everything becomes weaker. Everybody becomes weaker. And that was the atmosphere that was pervasive at the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Now again, the prophets, the sages, didn't know this. Meaning, of course they knew that things were falling apart, but they didn't understand. They needed to ask Hashem, how did this happen? They didn't know that there was this devaluing of Torah, or they didn't know that the devaluing of Torah was so bad that it affected everything the way it did. Whatever it is, we're not talking about an overt problem. We're talking about a subtlety. By definition, it has to be subtle, because if it was overt, the sages would have figured it out. The Nevi'im would have figured it out. So if they didn't know, it must be subtle. And Hashem says, this is the subtlety. That there was a subtle devaluation of the study of Torah. Today, we put a great deal of emphasis on the study of Torah. And we'd like to believe that we are correcting that to some extent. That there is a great value put on the study of Torah. We value people who study Torah full time. And we also value that men should put time into the study of Torah no matter what their vocation is. That they be studying Torah every day at a set time, koveya itim, that there be a set time to study Torah. We value that. Daf Yomi is a wonderful example of how we value Torah. But the Medrash tells us another element to the devaluation of the study of Torah, and this is something which is somewhat frightening and something that perhaps we really need to think about. I was actually surprised in preparing this year, because I'd never seen this Medrash before, and it's not just one Medrash. This Medrash appears several different Midrashim say it regarding this Pasuk. And I was actually surprised that this is not quoted more frequently. The Medrash tells us, if you see cities in Eretz Yisrael that have been uprooted and have been destroyed, you should know that in those cities, they did not adequately pay those who teach Torah. Now that is frightening. Because I don't think that we, as a people, can say that we adequately pay those who teach Torah. I think that we all understand that that's a big problem. I want you to be aware that among the young women who are entering the workforce, they are often discouraged from pursuing any kind of a teaching career. Even the best of them, the ones who are natural teachers, because the pay is so dismal, they'll never be able to help with finances in their family if they go into teaching. It's very hard for girls' schools today, from girls' schools, to find qualified teachers because they're all running away from it. Because there's just not enough money. And we know this is the case. This is not the plight of Rabbeim and Moros in all communities. It seems to be universal. We all know about this. I think here in Atlanta we do a comparatively good job. But at the same time, we know every what Rebbe, what Mora is paid adequately. They're all underpaid. We know that. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. We all know this. And we accept it as a reality. And the Medrash says that is an example of the devaluation of the study of Torah. See, we put a lot of value on adults studying Torah. We even put value on the children, sort of, studying Torah. We do. But it's not reflected in adequately compensating people who are there to teach the Torah and motivate our children to study Torah. And that is an example of Alma of the Haaretz, why the land was lost. The devaluation of the study of Torah. Again, this was new to me. I had not seen this measure before. I never heard of this measure before. But it was frightening to me to see it. Because I was thinking the whole time, you know, patting ourselves on the back, okay, we value the study of Torah. But I'm not so sure that we have actually extricated ourselves from where they were at that time.
In what context was this? What was this?
What context was the Medrash? It was about this pasuk, about this verse.
That's what I'm asking. What was the context of this Medrash? Cities in Israel.
He was quoting this and saying, "Alma of the why the land was destroyed," and then Hashem says, "Because they left, they forsook the Torah and the devaluation of Torah." And this is the example it gives of not paying the teachers adequately. And as I said, it's not one place; it's not an obscure source. It appears in I saw it in at least four different midrashim about this pasuk.
Did they learn Torah then?
The question is, did they learn Torah? Yes, they learned Torah. That's what I'm saying. They can't be they didn't learn Torah, because then anybody, you wouldn't need a prophet or a sage to figure that out. We all could have figured that out. It's got to be that they were learning Torah. Daf Yomi was thriving. It has to be, because they didn't know. They didn't understand what the problem was. So it's got to be that it was subtle. That's what I'm saying. Today, we may be suffering from the same problem, and it's also subtle. Right? You see so many people studying Torah, but there's still a subtlety over here. If we're not adequately compensating for it, so then maybe we really don't value it as much as we think we do. Right? I was saying, it's a subtlety. It's a subtlety, but it's frightening if we are still falling into the same trap. Pasuk Gimel, verse 13, Vayelchu acharei shvinus libam, they went after the waywardness of their hearts, v'acharei ha-be'olim asher limdu mavosam, and after the be'olim, which is one of the more well-known avodah zarah, one of the well-known idolatries that they were taught by their ancestors. Lachein ka'amar Hashem tzvokos, therefore says Hashem Elokei Yisrael, the God of Israel, hinani ma'achilam es ha-mazel la'ana, I am feeding this nation this bitter root, v'yishkisim me'rosh, and I'm giving them to drink also this bitter drink. V'avhitzosim bagoyim, I will scatter them amongst the nations. Asher lo yodu heim avavosam, that they didn't know them, nor their ancestors. V'shilach li'acharem es'acher, and I will send the sword after them, even when they're in exile, the sword will follow them, ad kalosi osam, until I destroy them. Komar Hashem tzvakos, so says Hashem, he's boninu, reflect, v'kiru la'mekoninos u'sfoena, and call to the mekoninos. The mekoninos are those who say, who lament. People today don't appreciate this concept, but it was commonplace, even in the time of the Gemara, it was commonplace to hire, women to come to a funeral, that they should cry at the funeral, which would bring out the emotions of people. I'll make it back to that in a minute. That's what a mekoninos is. Vela chachamos shilchu, and to the wise women, these are also women who are involved in this, in the lamentations. V'savon, send for them, v'savon, and they will come. Let me read one more verse. We'll get back to this idea. Usmaherna, they should come quickly. V'sisena aleinu nehi, they should lift up upon us. Nehi, which means, crying and wailing. V'seiradna einenu dima, and our eyes will pour forth with tears. They will bring out the tears in us. Vafapenu yizlu mayim, and our eyelids will pour water. The reason why they would do this, they would hire women to do this, is because sometimes people, we can understand this, have a hard time showing their emotions. A person, sometimes it's hard to just turn on the emotions. We can be at a sad place. A person can be, God forbid, at a funeral, and they want to cry, but it's hard, it's just not coming out. Very often it is the eulogy that brings out the crying. And that's a mitzvah. The Gemara says, Igra dehespeda deluyi, that the main reward that Hashem gives for a delivery of a eulogy is deluyi, is raising one's voice to get people to cry. The goal of a eulogy is to get people to cry for the one who passed away. Because again, the emotions are inside, it's hard to bring it out. And someone who's I don't want to say good at it, I want to say does a good job of delivering a eulogy, will get people to cry. That's a good thing. We don't have to go into this now, but that's a big difference between funerals that we attend versus the rest of the world. We know that a funeral is a time to cry. Ace, leave coast. It's a time to cry. And it's a good thing to get people to cry. There's nothing more effective in getting people to cry than hearing people cry. So they would hire women to come. They weren't faking it. These women were in touch with their emotions. They were able to feel the pain, and they would come and allow themselves to feel the pain of the person who passed away and those who are still here, even though they didn't know the person and didn't know the people, but they had empathy for their fellow brothers and sisters, and they would cry, and that would bring out the tears for everybody else. That was a commonplace thing in the time of the Navi and also the time of the Gemara. So here Hashem says, have them come so that we can all cry. But the Medrash says, v'seiradna einenu dima, our eyes should pour forth with tears. Hashem says, I'm including myself in this. So to speak, kiviyachol, so to speak, I want to cry along with you. Call for those mekoninos, those women who lament, so that they can bring out the tears in all of us, and I will cry along with everybody else. Pasuk Yudches, verse 18. Ki kol nihi nishma mitzion, echshu dadnu, because the sound of wailing comes from Tzion, how we have been taken captive. Boshnu ma'od, ki azavnu aretz. We are ashamed because we have forsaken the land. Ki shlichu mishkinosenu, our mishkinos, from the word mishkan, our sanctuaries have been thrown down. We have thrown down our sanctuaries. The Medrash says this is a reference to the Bate Knesios and the Bate Midrashos, the shuls and the base Medrashes, that we've thrown them down. We have not used them properly. Yutes 19, Kishemana Noshim Dvar Hashem. When the women should hear the word of Hashem, v'sikach oznachem dvar piv, and your ears should take his words. V'lameidna v'noseichem nehi, and teach your daughters to cry. V'isha re'usa kina, and each woman should teach her friend to lament. The Mishnah says that there's two different types of crying and lamenting that goes on at a funeral. There is where all of these women, where they cry together, and then there is one where one cries out and the other ones follow with their crying. And that she says something and the other ones then follow her lead. The Gemara tells us that the second one, where it's responsive, is more powerful. It creates a stronger emotional response, and the both are being referenced over here with Nehi and Kina. Ki ala maves b'chaloneinu, for death has come up in our windows. Ba ba'armino senu, it has come into our halls, our big places. Ba'achris olol michutz, to cut off the young child outside. Ba'churim merechavos, the young men from the streets. That there's death, unfortunately, because of plague, because of sickness. We, of course, can relate to this because of recent events. Daber, speak. Konu Hashem, so says Hashem. V'nafla nivlas ha'adam kidomen al pnei asadeh, the corpse of man will fall quiet, like totally silent on the face of the field. Uchyamir me'acharei ha'kotzer, and like the sheaves, the bundles from behind the one who's harvesting, vein me'aseif, and no one's gathering. And it's like someone's harvesting a field and cutting down the sheaves, they're falling and no one's picking them up. They're just falling on the face of the field. When we read the Haftorah of Tisha B'Av, until this point, we read with the sad tune of Eicha. As I mentioned last week, it is not read with the typical Haftorah tune, the typical Haftorah trup, but rather it is read with the Eicha tune, the Eicha trup, the sad, lamenting, perhaps haunting tune of Eicha. That goes until here, and through Pasuk Chafal, through verse 21. But the last two psukim of the Haftorah, which are Chaf Beis and Chaf Gimel 22 and 23, the reader switches over to the regular Haftorah tune for these two verses. Because until here, we have the very, very, very sad part of the Haftorah and all the terrible things that have happened and how Hashem himself is, kivyachol, so to speak, crying over what has happened. And here we have words that are strong words, but they are words that are meant to build. They are words that are meant to focus us. What do we do with the sadness? What do we do with the tears? How do we build? How do we grow? Here we have the answer. Ko amar Hashem, so says Hashem famously, Al yisalel chacham b'chachmaso, the wise man should not be proud of his wisdom. Val yisalel hagibor b'gvuraso, and the strong man should not be proud of his strength. Al yisalel ashir ba'ashro, the wealthy man should not be proud of his wealth. Ki bezos yisalel hamisalel, rather, this is when someone, the proud one, should be proud of. For what should one be proud? Haskel v'yadoa osi, one should be intelligent and know me. Ki ani Hashem, that I am Hashem, osa chesed, mishpat utzlaka baretz, I do kindness, judgment, and righteousness in the land. Ki ve'ele chafatzti, this is what I desire. Num Hashem, says Hashem. What do I desire, says Hashem? I desire chesed, mishpat, and tzedakah. That my children should behave with kindness, with judgment, meaning true and honest judgment, utzdaka, and righteousness and charity. That is what Hashem says, that is what I'm asking for. And knowing me, haskel v'yadoa osi, be intelligent and know me. Your wisdom, your strength, your wealth are not valuable without this component, without haskel v'yadoa osi, be intelligent and know me. The Medrash says here what I thought was a fascinating idea, because it made me think about it in a different way. The Medrash says you can have a very, very intelligent, wise man. And the Medrash goes on to list different types of wisdom that technologies that were new for that time, how people figured things out, really incredible things about how to harvest crops better and how to redirect water better, and all types of really incredibly intelligent, wise, clever things in the physical world that were discovered, that were used, that someone figured out. And the Medrash says you can have such a wise person, and yet that person is a fool in not knowing his creator. that the wisdom that they have, their intelligence, they don't use their intelligence. In a certain area, they act like someone who has no intelligence, and that they don't know their own creator. We know that there are people in this world who are very intelligent people. Very intelligent people who may be, who may know much about the wisdom of the world, the sciences. They may know much about all kinds of knowledge in the world. And they're very smart people, very intelligent people. But they reject the idea that there is a creator. I think that most of us, certainly this is the way I was thinking about it, most of us say or think, these are very smart people. They have a philosophical problem. We know they're wrong about their non-belief in God. That's a mistake they're making. But that's a philosophical mistake. They're very wise people. They're very smart people. And they use their intelligence to know this world in a very, very intense way, very, very profound way. But they have a philosophical problem. The Medrash says that is not the case. It's not a philosophical problem. Their shortcoming is not philosophical. It's an intelligence problem. They are lacking in intelligence when it comes to knowing God. Because an intelligent person will recognize that there is a God. Someone who rejects God is a sign of foolishness. It's a lack of intelligence. You can have a very, very smart person who is acting in a very, very non-smart way when they do not believe in God. And this is because there's no intelligent reason not to believe in God. How many hoops does science have to go through in order to justify whatever it is they can find without introducing a creator or a being that is manipulating nature? They don't want to accept that. They don't want to accept that there could be anything supernatural ever going on. They don't even want to accept that there's any possibility that there is a being that is, even in a natural way, manipulating nature. It's gotta be by chance. It's gotta be probability. It's gotta be, there's billions of stars out there and billions of planets and this one just happened. That's what they have to say. That's not an intelligent way of thinking. There's no intelligence in that. That's a person who has decided there can't be a God. Therefore, we gotta figure out a way of putting things together so that it can make sense. But that's not coming from anything intelligent. There's nothing smart about that. That is a lack of intelligence. That is a demonstration of a suspension of intelligence. That's what that is. And that's what the Medrash says over here. That your wisdom is not valuable if you don't use it to know me. How can you call yourself a wise person if you reject the notion that I exist? Or you reject the notion, I think a lot of people believe that God does exist, but they believe that God doesn't really have anything to do with this world, which is almost the same thing as saying he doesn't exist. Either way, it's a lack of intelligence. It's not a philosophical lack. It's not a philosophical problem. It is an intelligence problem. It's a lack of wisdom. Pasuk Chav Dalet, verse 24. Hine yamim baim nu Hashem. Behold, days are coming, says Hashem. Ufakadati kol mul ba'arla, and I will visit, which means I will punish, all mul ba'arla. Mul means mulim, means someone who is circumcised. Arla is uncircumcised. So I will visit upon anybody who is circumcised, if they also have an uncircumcised part of themselves. We know that the Torah and the Nevi'im speak about the heart being uncircumcised. And that is a problem. And that is exactly what it says in the next pasuk, Chafei 25. Who will I punish, says Hashem? Al Mitzrayim, Val Yehuda, Val Edom, Val Bnei Amon, Val Moav. All these different nations, which includes Yehuda, Ve'alko kitzutze fea, and all the outlying countries, Hayosh v'mamidbar, who dwell in the wilderness, ki kol hagoyim arelim, for all the nations of the world are are lim, which means uncircumcised. For chobes Israel are lev, and the Jewish people, although they are circumcised, are uncircumcised of the heart. The Mishnah tells us in Maseches Nedarim that Jews are called mulim, circumcised, and non-Jews are called arei lim, uncircumcised. The Mishnah tells us that arei lim is a pejorative, meaning that it doesn't matter physically who is circumcised and who is not, that it is considered to be a praise to be considered circumcised, and Jews are considered circumcised, whereas the goyim are considered uncircumcised, irrespective of whether they are physically circumcised or not. It's irrelevant. But here, we Jews are told that you may be technically mulim, circumcised, but you are arle lev, you are uncircumcised of the heart. And your heart is still behaving in a manner that unfortunately undermines your status of being mulim, of being circumcised. And Hashem says that the days will come that I will punish for that. We will stop here. As I said, we have completed the Haftarah for Tisha B'Av. Next time we meet, Mirtz Hashem, that'll be on July the 7th. That'll be during the 3 weeks. That'll be really right, week and a half before Tisha B'Av. And we will, Mirtz Hashem, at that time do Perek Yud, chapter 10. The way it works out for us is that chapter 10 is actually going to be a little bit more conciliatory than what we've had until now. So, it's a little bit backwards, because at that time, we really should be focusing on the three chapters we just read, which are the ones that are the heaviest ones, that are ones that really are Tisha B'Av appropriate. But that is the way it works out, and Mitzvah Hashem, next time, we'll pick up with Perek Yud, chapter 10.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it, so that he can continue that site.